Fabrique Belgique.
Get out, you noisy little kid.
Look out, Margate, and look up your daughters, eh?
Happy Monday, Peckham, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Jolly Boys podcast. Joining me on today's episode is Dragon's Den star, Mr. Theo Pathetis. Theo tells us what makes Only Fools and Horses such a special show for him. He also reminisces about his first ever business venture that took place in his first school, and we also discuss the Only Fools and Horses the musical. Theo is an absolute genius. I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoy making it. And if you like what you hear, perhaps leave us a review. Without any further ado, please let me introduce to you Mr. Theo Pathetis. Hello, Theo. Welcome to the Jolly Boys podcast. Thank you so much for giving up your time to join us.
Absolute pleasure, Chris. Absolute pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to start off with the first question that I ask every guest who comes on this podcast. It can be quite an in-depth one. It can be quite an emotional one. Or it can be quite a simple one. So my first question to you, Theo, is what does Only Fools and Horses mean to you?
Wow. It's a great question, because I don't think I can answer it in the time that you've got to do this podcast, to be perfectly honest. I watched it as a very young man, trying to make my way in life. And to see somebody else trying to achieve some of the things that I thought I wanted to achieve or wanted to achieve, but in such a haphazard, comical and fun way, was just amazing. And you just couldn't help it. It gave you a lift and actually made you feel good in so many different ways, because it made you feel good because you laughed. And when you laugh, you feel good. It made you feel good because in the real world, you know he's been an idiot. And this is going to backfire. And this is going to be a disaster. And they'll, how can you not see this? Saying that, how could we not see some of the gags that were signposted so in advance by John Sullivan when they're hitters? And I think that was the expectation. Yeah, not that it was going to be silly, it was going to backfire, but he had a great heart. His intentions were always to be a good friend to somebody and to help out anybody. But you just knew it was going to backfire. Whoever he was trying to help, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And if on the way, while he was trying to help somebody, it was an opportunity to make a pound, he'd take it.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
You feel it, maybe not. So it was a big part of my life, and it became a big part of my kids' lives. And waiting for those Christmas specials to come up was just, you know, everyone sat in front of the TV. And those cringeworthy moments that we've all loved and seen, and seen them all over again. And the words, the language, that become part of our psyche and part of the language, and it's still being used. Now, I've got some friends which remain absolutely nameless, but I'm going to point them to this podcast when it's out, who are ennobled and very well known, very successful business people, great philanthropists. And if I could show you some of the WhatsApps we have amongst ourselves, you know, some of the words that are used, one or two, you know, bonnet de douche, these, you know, all these things, I mean, they're part of the language.
Yeah.
And you can see they'll play such a big part in their lives as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you with a bit of biggest grin on my face, because I've got a WhatsApp group which is very similar to the one that you've described, and we basically communicate with each other in Only Fools and Horses slang or quotes, and that's all it is, and we love it.
Anyway, so absolutely big part of our lives, as was obviously the characters Trigger, Boise, Marlene, Denzel, even Mickey Pierce. Not forgetting, obviously, Grandad Uncle. So you got Buster behind you at the moment. Did you paint that?
I did paint it. Yeah, it's a bit back to front because of the way the camera is. But if I bring it up a little bit closer to you, it's just finished. But would you invest in me as an artist, Theo?
Well, actually, I've got to be honest with you. From what I can see, and obviously I'm looking at you over the screen, so through rose-coloured glasses, as they say, but it does look incredibly good.
Christy, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you. Going back to what you're saying about Only Fools and Horses, so many people associate it with having warm family, beautiful memories. And I think that's what's so special about the show. I think that's what appeals to the masses, because it reminds them of visiting their grandparents every Sunday, having a roast dinner, and sadly these people are no longer around. So it just holds such a special place for people in their hearts. And I just think there's no other show out there that can achieve that.
There hasn't been. I mean, there's been some amazingly good comedy shows since, and that have been brilliant. And I thought, wow, you know, this takes me back. But I always then compare them to Fools and Horses.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever brilliant comedy show comes out, and I think, oh, that's great, this is really good. My first comparison is it as good as Fools and Horses? There was one a few years back, we didn't get traction for some reason. I think I know the reason, called White Gold. Did you ever see it?
Yes, about the window glazeman.
Yes.
Yes, I enjoyed it.
The script in that was fab, and the moments, there was some great cringeworthy moments in that also. And it was a similar story of a boy trying to make it into the big time and become a successful businessman. And guess what? It wasn't going to happen. I thought that was quite good. But whatever comes out for me, it has to stand the test of time. The test of time, how many times I've seen repeat shows as I'm scanning through the TV. And I'm now doing it with my grandkids. That's hilarious. And I've got to tell you, my son has got a sort of man cave in the back of the garden, as everybody started doing during the lockdown period. So he got himself a shed type building and converted it into a bar, and he's got Del Boy's bar in there. He's got the pineapple, he's got the ice bucket bear, he's got everything in there, and he keeps cigars in there, you know, he's got the drinks on the bar, he's got the whole lot in there. It's just comical when you walk in there and you think you're actually walking in. He's got the armchair. You walk into Del Boy's lair, basically.
That sounds like a bar I'd love to visit.
Yes, excellent.
Sounds like a really, really cool place. So you were born in Cyprus, is that right? And what year was it?
There wasn't a lot of Del Boy in Cyprus. I was born in 1959, so that was pre-black. It was black and white a long time ago. People didn't have TVs where I was born. And my first TV, sort of TV, was watching a neighbour's TV when I came to England.
What year was that for you?
Oh, it was a great year. It was absolutely, Chris, amazing year. I mean, we won the World Cup. I mean, whoa, time to come. I mean, I thought, this football malarkey is brilliant. We win everything. I mean, this is the best country in the world for football. We're going to win. And the next, the following year, 1970, I'm thinking, right. No, I didn't go according to plan.
Right.
And ever since, it's a bit like Del Boy's luck.
Yeah, yeah.
It hasn't happened again.
No, it hasn't. So did you watch Only Fools and Horses from a young age? Do you remember watching it from the get-go, from series one? What can you remember?
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying to remember when was series one?
It was 1981, September, I think it was released.
Yeah, no, it was... So I got married in 1978, right? Which, for those of you that are good with numbers, will work out that Mrs. P would be in serious, serious trouble now, because she's a lot older than me. Serious, serious trouble now in today's age. But she did wait until my 18th birthday and then forced me to marry her. Hasn't let go since, bless her. No, I love it. It's been 44 years. But yeah, so we've just, so thank you. So 1981, we had had our first child. So we had our first child because he was born in 1981. And we just moved into our first house at that time. So we had our own colour TV. It was secondhand, but it was colour.
Knocked off.
Well, I wasn't knocked off in those days in Peckham. That'd be ridiculous. Our first flat was in Peckham Road.
That's incredible.
It was next to the fire station in Peckham Road and the sausage, Kennedy's sausage factory. So you could smell the sausages being cooked. The fire engine kept you awake at night. So it was an interesting time. And of course, the mighty Millwall was just up the road.
Yep. One day Millwall will win the cup.
Exactly. So what more does a boy need? I mean, we had everything. I mean, that was it. I knew that stage had arrived.
So you must have had a lot of time on your hands in 1981 then with your firstborn. So have you got memories of looking after your first child whilst watching Only Fools and Horses?
I think that was babysitting. That was looking after. I mean, you know, if the kid was awake or any of the kids were awake, and it was on, they'd be sitting there watching it. And as they grew older, I mean, and these things called video recorders came out. Of course, you could record then off the TV. It was amazing. It was just like, well, it was the only decision you had to make was, would it be VHS or Betamax or Russian, as we discovered. And Dol got that one wrong. I ended up with, I started up with a Philips. There was another system, Philips, which was the early system before VHS and Betamax. And I started off with that because a friend of mine had a deal on them. So got that and then realized I couldn't get any tapes for it from anywhere. So that had to go. That was useless. That was as useless as the Russians. And then I went Betamax because that was the better quality.
It was like a bigger version of a VHS, wasn't it?
Smaller version than it was two-thirds the size.
Oh, was it? For some reason, I thought it was bigger. But yeah, I was born in 1985, so I do remember VHS very well. I used to build tunnels for my train sets with them, but not Betamax. Well,
yeah, so Betamax was came out exactly the same time. So I got Betamax, which the quality was better. And then it became clear that VHS was going to be the winner. So tapes were cheaper. The machines were cheaper. The quality had moved on. So I had to buy Ferguson. A Ferguson Video Star.
And Ferguson's the best. That's the best.
That was the one. Imagine, this is early 80s.
Yeah.
Right? 800 quid.
Crikey. Stone the crows.
Exactly. So, and your tapes were valuable. So recording, having your own copy of the shows was amazing. So you'd record them and keep them all in order. Mm-hmm. And even now, my bookshelves at home, I've got DVD box sets of Fools and Horses, various box sets that are all up there.
Yeah, you're just like me. I've got so many different box sets because they've got all different cuts. Do you still own the Betamax? Did you keep them safe or did you throw them away thinking they were going to be useless?
No, they went long time ago. Shame, but there. So no Betamax, not very few VHSs, actually. I've got a few VHS family tapes left, which have need to be transferred at some stage. But no, that's it.
So, it's strange, isn't it, how it all works out? Because I know lots of people who threw away their vinyls thinking that they were going to be useless when CDs came in, like original pressings of like the Beatles and things like that. And now, obviously, they're all back again and they're probably crying that they did what they did.
Oh, for a degree in hindsight.
Yeah, absolutely.
I knew yesterday what I know today.
That's a very good saying. So going back to your school years, I did read on the internet that you took over the tuck shop when you were at school. Is this true or is it just hearsay?
It's very, very, very true.
Okay.
I was dyslexic. So I was in the lowest of all the classes at school. Although I wasn't silly or thick, but I was considered to be thick. So there was no learning to be done because the rest of the kids in my class had no intention of learning anything. So I've been entrepreneurial and not, living in a council tenement block, not Nelson Mandela House, but this was called Blake House.
Not Zimbabwe House.
It was called Blake House, not Bleak. Blake. Was Bleak. And that was in Brecknock Road in Camden Town, between Tufnell Park and Camden. And single parent, so there's no money around. So you have to be entrepreneurial. You have to go and make your own money. And it was interesting. I joined the student union, went on the committee, and said, we need a tuck shop. I volunteered to start a tuck shop. School subbed me 20 quid to get some stuff, some stock. Gave me a doorway and a table so I could put a table in front of the doorway. Obviously, a fire hazard.
Yeah.
Because it was a fire exit. but we didn't worry about that. And I was selling crisps and wagon wheels, curly whirlies, some of those things you probably haven't got a clue what they are, but because they don't exist anymore. And very, very artificially spiked fruit drinks.
Right.
That made all the kids' heads go round. That went really well for the first week until the playground was covered in litter.
Right.
So I was dragged in and said, look, you're causing a lot of litter. We're going to have to shut it down. So I said, no, leave it with me. Leave it with me. So I devised a system where all the little kids, if they could bring me 10 packs, empty packets of crisps, I'd give them one packet free.
That's a genius idea.
So I get them to pick up the rubbish and bring it back, which was great, but it ate into the profits. So then I devised another wheeze, which was, I don't know if you remember at school, but well, you probably don't, but we used to have chemical scales where you, in chemistry, which were really fine scales that would measure things by the fraction of a gram.
Okay.
And I would, when the box arrived from Smith's, we got an account with, when the box arrived, I'd take the crisps out and weigh them. And now and again, there'd be a duff one, where it was about 4 grams short of what was said in the packet. Mm-hmm. So a letter would fly off back to Smith's with the bag of crisps, saying this is forms a staple part of the kids' diet. And crisps are light. Guess what would happen? Free box would arrive, or 2 free boxes would arrive, and that would cover the requirement for keeping the playground clear. So I did that for a couple of years.
That's so clever. That is incredibly clever. So do you think your main influence for running the tuck shop and your ideas behind how to get ahead in business was inspired by Dalboy? I know you probably get this question all the time, but do you think it was?
Well, the sad thing about it, I was pre-Dalboy, wasn't I? Because that was in the 70s.
Okay, so, that is true. So you are the original Dalboy then.
So what we all saw in Dalboy is we saw bits of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So all these successful people I mentioned earlier that we've got a WhatsApp group on, we all saw some of ourselves, not all of us, some of ourselves in Dalboy as we started our career.
Yeah.
And as we grew up. So that's when Dalboy came on as we started becoming adults. We'd become adults. We were 18, 20. And we all saw part of ourselves in Dalboy. And it's just the fun factor that what he was doing, being entrepreneurial. Now, you know, it is amazing that all these years later, I end up on a TV program talking about entrepreneurialism and investing in people. And I've got to say, I did it with humor. I enjoyed, and that humor came from Fools and Horses and Del.
Okay, yeah.
So to find myself in that position, And I would use some of the Dell's lines. Mm-hmm. It didn't really bother me because they're happy lines. It's happy. It's fun. And business is fun, can be fun, should be fun. And it's tough. And there's reversals. and you got to lick your wounds when those things happen. But you got to do what Del does, gets back up again, puts his best suit on, best rings, best watch, gets his best camel coat on, you know, brings out a la-di-da and gets down to the Nag's Head.
Yeah.
You know, and we go again.
That's a really good attitude to have, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm self-employed, you know, I run my own business and, you know, it can be tough, especially with everything that's been going on with the pandemic. So that's some really, really good advice, Theo.
It's been incredibly tough. So having a good sense of humour in what you do, looking at the positive side and not letting it get you down however much it gets down. I mean, how many times did you see Del feeling sorry for himself?
Never.
Not many. Mm-hmm. Not many. I'm just trying to think. It's not many. All those reversals and he bounced back.
Yes. Yeah, it's good for everyone to have a bit of Del Boy in them, as cheesy as that sounds. So I wanted to speak to you next about the book that you helped work on with lovely Steve Clark, The Inside Story of Only Fools and Horses. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I don't take any credit. It's Steve's book. It was very, very funny. So Steve spoke to me and told me he was doing the book and said, look, when I've done it, can you mind having a read and doing the foreword? I said, I would love to, because he knew I was a fan. And he produced his book, and I so enjoyed reading it. And I remember doing the foreword. And this sounds proper crass, but I was doing the foreword sitting on the deck of my super yacht, which I've recently just sold, actually. It's very sad. How can a man not have it? I felt this is what Del would have wanted. This is... If Del was here today, this has been his ambition. I had this boat for about 10, 11 years, so it's quite a while ago. And I was sitting there thinking, Del would be, I could just see him now with, you know, with Raquel. And, of course, Boise and Marlene. It would be superb. And I did the foreword, and all I did was really think back about just a fraction of the happy times and the laughs that I got out of all those series and Christmas specials.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, it's a fantastic
read. It's dead easy.
It's a great book. Have you had a chance to read the 40th anniversary book by Jim Sullivan and Mike Jones? I've got it just here and I'm showing you. It's a fantastic read. If you haven't read it, I've learned so much from it.
I have not seen that, actually, no.
It's a beautiful book.
Sorry, just what was it? Let me just quickly jot that down.
It's called A Celebration of 40 Years of Only Fools and Horses. It's called Lovely Jubbly by Mike Jones.
40 Years, Fools and Horses, Lovely Jubbly.
Yeah.
Lovely Jubbly. Jim Sullivan and Mike Jones.
Yes.
Lovely.
It's a fantastic read for Jubbly. A fan. And I thought I knew pretty much everything about Only Fools and Horses until I picked up this book. And there's so many unseen photographs in newspaper clippings in stories which I didn't have any clue about, so I definitely recommend it.
I love things like that because it takes the stress out of everybody when they want to buy me something. I just put it on my wish
list. There you go, put it on your Christmas list, and if you behave, yep, Santa might bring it for you, Theo.
Indeed.
So let's talk about the Only Fools and Horses musical, because I saw you were invited along to the premiere. I've seen a lovely picture of you posing next to the three-wheel van
with Mrs P. Yeah, she was there.
How did you and your wife find the musical? Was it everything that you thought it would be?
Actually, I've got to be honest, it's like all these blasted things when someone does either a tribute or a show about something that you really, really value, you are terrified. And you just think it can't be. It's not going to be any good. It's going to be ruined. And in some ways, you go with negative thoughts because you know you're not going to like it. And with this, we turned up, and I bought her a steak supper beforehand.
Guaranteed steak meal for Mrs. P.
Yeah, exactly. And a bottle of Mate's Rosé. And we had some prawn cocktail starter with Black Forest Gato to finish. So it was proper.
Christy.
Popper, yeah. And we went in. And I actually loved it. It was absolutely brilliant. And Paul Whitehouse, who is just genius anyway, to be
perfect. Agreed, yeah.
I mean, proper genius. And in some ways, it was always overshadowed by Harry Enfield whenever they did stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because Harry was the sort of star already.
Yeah.
And Paul sort of was a sort of supporting act. But so much of all those great shows that they did together came from Paul as well. And I don't think he really got the credit amongst, I think his amongst his peers, he probably did, because people know how good he is. But I think as far as the public were concerned, I don't think they really realised how good he is. And this was no exception. I mean, it was just absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, so thoroughly enjoyed it enjoyed the whole evening. And of course, I'm trying to remember. So the guy who Del was going to manage, who couldn't pronounce his R's. Good inquiring.
Tony Angelino, Philip
Pope.
Yeah,
Tony Angelino. So he was there.
Oh, was he?
So I took one, because he looked, I took one look at him. I thought, I know where I got it. I can't remember. I said, what was his character? He was in the show, because he was in the bar beforehand. In the bar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I said, he's been in the show. And then Steve Clark introduced me to him. And of course, I worked out who he was. And it was just like so funny.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy, Phil Pope. We've not had him on the podcast before, but I do know other people who know him fairly well and say he's a really, really nice guy. They should have got him up on stage for an encore.
Yeah. That would have been funny. That would have been funny. Yeah, so that was it was a great show. Really, really enjoyed it.
I went up there with absolutely zero expectations, and I deliberately starved myself from any information about the musical, because I wanted to go and see it and not know anything about it. And I was completely blown away. I thought the casting was absolutely spectacular.
Brilliant.
And the guy called Oscar Conlon Murray, who plays the dating agency guy, I thought he completely stole the show in his own right, being such a small character, but the way he played it, which is absolutely incredible.
It was super.
Did you see recently, I think it was the Sun newspaper was running a competition where you can win a chance to have a cameo on the musical. I think it's for a weekend.
No, I haven't seen that. I must have missed it from the saw away Sun. But I'm sitting in my office at the moment, all right? And just as you know, sitting on the sofa, listening to what we're saying. But as I look at my office, there's a big screen ahead in front of me and light. And next to it, there's a very large picture of me sitting in a famous chair. I don't know if I can, because I'm using my iPad, because it sounds so much better on my iPad.
Okay.
I'm just wondering on this, can we, this doesn't allow you to switch, does it allow you to switch cameras on Zoom? I'm not sure it does.
I'm not sure. There's normally a button you can press. Oh, there you go. I can see your lovely glass table.
Right. So the screen. I want to take you to something on the wall here.
I was looking at this photo only yesterday.
Oh, were you here?
So was that at a convention?
No. So that was when they were filming one of the tribute shows. Years and years and years ago, I was kindly invited to go to the studio, and they had, as you know, there's a curator of all things Dell and Fools and Horses, so they had everything else. They even had the butterfly, all his rings, the gold chains, the coats, the clothes were all mannequins. So all the props that managed to be saved.
So all the original props.
All the original props.
That's incredible. So for the listeners who aren't aware of what Theo just showed me, it was a lovely framed photograph of Theo sat in, was it Grandad's chair or was it Del Boy's chair?
No, that's Uncle Al. It was Grandad's chair.
Sat in Grandad's chair on the set of Only Fools and Horses. What a great photo.
With the bar behind. That sits on my pride of place in my office in a big blown up picture.
I don't blame you. That is an incredible, incredible photo. We spoke briefly earlier on about a very significant birthday that you recently had for your 60th. Would you care to share that? Would you care to share that story with myself and the listeners again?
I can. So a couple of years ago, I mean, only a couple of years ago, before anyone says anything, I turned 60, and the team here had a surprise bash for me up in London at the Ivy Club. I mean, some of you may know, some of you may not know. Not quite the Nag's Head, but it's a nice place up in London. And there was a big screen, and all my friends were there, all business associates were there, and everyone was there. And everyone had over the last 6 months, through my personal assistant, Emily, submitted a video, a short video, 30-second video of where they met me originally and gone back to those places. So we're going back now, in some cases, 30, 40 years, right, and where we met. And right at the end, so it was great. I sat there, and this video went on forever because they were all my friends were there. First job, everything else, in my first job in retail in Bond Street, and it was fantastic. And all the characters, someone wasn't even sure was still alive. How she dug them up, I don't know. And some of them, in fairness, had been dug up. I mean, they didn't look great, I've got to be honest. And since then, we've had various discussions. Right at the end, the video comes up, this guy, and he's wearing a David Jason Del Boy mask on. And he's giving it to me, properly giving it to me. And I thought, blimey, the impersonation is superb. This guy's good, which I don't know any of my friends that can actually do this impersonation so well.
Yeah.
And so this guy with a Del Boy, David Jason mask on. And at the end of it, he removes the mask. And it was David.
That's so cool.
Absolutely bloody brilliant. I just completely, jaw just fell to the ground. I could not believe it. I said, who the hell managed to get that? So I'm forever in his debt. It actually made my day.
That must have been an amazing experience. Is there any photographic evidence or video footage of your face at that moment where the mask gets revealed and you realise that it's Sir David Jason?
I think there's loads of photographic evidence, to be perfectly honest, but no, I'm going to release the public.
That's fair enough. That's such a wonderful story, though, and what a lovely birthday gift, and what an amazing memory.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll never forget that.
So we've seen you've taken part in quite a few Only Fools and Horses documentaries for UK Gold.
It might be Gold. Yes, I think you might be right.
Because I always get Gold, because I get confused between the BBC documentaries and then the UK Gold documentaries. But how did they find you, Theo, to get you onto the documentary? Was it because of your involvement with Steve Clark and the book, or was it because they somehow knew you were a big fan?
I've been public about being a fan many times, and I think Steve's book obviously helped because it was a good reference point.
Yeah.
I've been very fortunate to ask. I've always done it. I did one during lockdown from my shepherd's hut. Right. I'd grown a proper Uncle Albert beard during that lockdown period.
I did see that, and I thought you looked really good with a beard. I think it really suits you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. P hated it.
Okay.
I did tell her my next wife's going to love it.
You should have said.
Didn't go down very well.
You're pulling my leg.
Exactly. So, I hadn't learned to fall down cellar doors yet. I'm practicing to land carefully and not hurt myself.
To fall in style.
Exactly. So yeah. So I think I've got a big stuffed bear behind me. Not a real stuffed bear, obviously, but it's a huge thing. So that was quite funny. It was quite funny doing that.
Well, I thought you were fantastic on the documentaries. And we also have a mutual friend, Jamie Borthwick, who's an actor in EastEnders. And he's a big fan of the show. And he often appears on these Gold documentaries to talk about why Only Fools and Horses is so special to him. We've had him on the podcast a few times, but Jamie's always really, really great to talk to.
Yes, I mean, and you know, the funniest thing is that obviously much after the show finished, I met Boycie Challis,
which John.
Sadly, John passed away last year. Was it last year?
Yes,
very recently. Yeah. Very recently. So had a pleasure of meeting him a few times. And when I was at Millwall, chairman of Millwall Football Club, of course, where I learnt my trade on the streets of Peckham, Mickey Pearce would now and again turn up.
Ah, Patrick Murray, you're lovely.
Yeah. Patrick would turn up now and again, so we'd see him there. So it was always a big part of my life, and those words that Grandad said about Del's dad, and the fact that and the final bit was, but then again he said Millwall would win the cup, and of course we got so incredibly close by getting to the FA Cup final. Against Manchester United, which didn't quite work out for us. Unfortunately, we went down 3-0, which wasn't a bad performance by us, sadly. But this young man called Ronaldo had just broken onto the scene, and he was roasting my left back, who went on to be a postman shortly after the FA Cup final. Right. I'm sure he sat in the pub telling his mates that he'd marked Ronaldo in the FA Cup final, but he's got a medal to prove the point.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we were an amazing team. I mean, we were probably our whole annual budget for players' wages was less than one Manchester United player.
Wow, that's good.
Their wages.
Yeah.
How we got to the FA Cup final and into playoffs and all sorts of things, and beat so many bigger clubs. And we really had that mentality of making things happen. And sort of Del Boy, he who dares wins, was always the case.
Yes, well, that line does always make me think of you. But listen, I'm gonna let you go, Theo. But it was really lovely talking to you about Only Fools and Horses. And thank you so much for giving up your time.
It's an absolute pleasure.
We got some half-price crack dice and miles of carpet tiles. TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LPs. Ball games, gold chains, what's her names and Ella Brooks. From Trevor Francis, track suits from a merchant shepherd's bridge.